Mother's Day, one day late, we're going to be replaying from the archives an exceptionally interesting interview with Dr. Mark Sloan, a pediatrician who has written a fascinating book called Birthday. A pediatrician explores the science, history, and wonder of childbirth. Monday's morning show begins just after 8.
This is WGTD HD, serving Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that explores and highlights various local issues and organizations. It's hosted by Jane Herring, a former marketing manager at Gateway Technical College, Jenny Tunkies, former reporter for the Kenosha News, and a former chief of staff for the Kenosha County Executive, Marcia Connett, who is a Southeast Regional Consultant for Wisconsin Literacy, and she provides literacy education support and management expertise. And Xander Miller, a librarian at the Kenosha Public Library, who also works on technology and digital skills. Community Matters also shares its time slot with the 30-time award-winning WGTD Radio Theater. And now, here's today's program.
And welcome to Community Matters. I'm Jane Herring, your host today, and I'm looking forward to talking with three guests from Women and Children's Horizons. We'll be talking with Sandy Reese, who is the board president, Kate Cothell, who is the fundraising and development director, and Sue Sipple, who is the interim executive director. Welcome to the program today.
We're happy to be here. Thank you for having us.
And it's the day before Mother's Day, and probably a good time to talk about really how your agency supports women in the Kenosha area. And let's just start with that big overview of what Women and Children's Horizons is all about. Sue, did you want to take that?
Yeah, sure. And although women is in our name, we support any victim of domestic violence, male or female, with our services. So want to make sure people understand that.
That
it's
is,
not just
right.
services for women. The services, there's quite a variety of services that range from an emergency shelter where someone who's fleeing domestic violence can come and stay, to some residential or non-residential services, advocacy, help with the court systems, help in securing restraining orders, help in securing whatever a domestic violence or sexual assault victim needs to stabilize their lives. In addition to that, we have staff in a couple of locations. We have an office in western Kenosha County, a Salem office, so that's staffed, as well as the one downtown. There are people based at the courthouse that help people there. We respond sometimes to calls, or we respond to calls at the hospital when there's a sexual assault. So staff are a number of locations and are mobile. In addition to those advocacy services, we have a 24-hour hotline that's answered by a trained advocate for victims, as well as maybe family members. Maybe someone has a daughter or a friend that's in a domestic violence situation or sexually assaulted, wants to talk to somebody about how they can help. So, you know, it's available not just to the victims themselves, but people people that are concerned about them.
Well, and let's talk about that part of it. We'll be digging deeper into all of these services and the locations you're in, but maybe I've been watching too much TV or reading too many books, but you often hear victims of domestic violence not reporting, or if they report, they recant. There's a million reasons why, I'm sure, but how can you intervene and then not intervene? I mean, what do you, how do you balance that?
And you're talking about as a friend or, you know, a relative, right?
How would you
support them, or how could the community support them? Generally, what we would say to someone who asked that question would be probably starting with what you should not do. You should not tell them they should leave, have to leave, rescue them from the situation, because victims, that's a dangerous time, first of all. Leaving is the most dangerous time for homicide. And if somebody is forced to leave, they're not ready. It's not their decision. So we would suggest that a concerned family member or friend would say, I'm worried about you. I'm really worried about your situation. And from what I know, it's not just going to stop, right? And it's not your fault, right? What's happening to you? And I want you to know that I'm here to help you or to listen to you when you're ready. Now, that's the hard part. You know, how much are you willing to help? Sometimes it might be just coming up with a plan with that neighbor, let's say, that the victim says, when I turn on my front porch light in the middle of the day, call the police, right? You can call anonymously as a neighbor. So, you know, coming up with some signals, some, you know, ways to support them. So it is reaching out that way.
Your mm-hmm. organization and where it comes into this situation. Mm-hmm. Would you be part of that plan, saying, oh, we know Women and Children's Horizons exists out there.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Maybe you can talk about how you might fit into that.
You know,
situation.
Ideally, when a victim makes that decision to leave, they've thought about it. It's not just in the moment. Sometimes it does happen in the moment. Sometimes there's an incident and, you know, the police say, this is really bad, you know, and the person says, okay, I need to come or go to the shelter. Ideally, there's some conversation leading up to it with that victim about how to safely leave, right? And it's kind of a planned leave. Now, the shelter is often full, and so that's a little tricky, right? But hopefully, if there's this communication as somebody's thinking or preparing to leave, they can leave as safely as possible, right? Perhaps it's accessing some of those non-residential services, maybe getting a restraining order or starting to come to one of our support groups, you know, to kind of build the confidence, learn about the resources, learn about how we can help them safely leave and have things in place as best they can to be able to live independently. So
I would imagine a certain amount of secrecy and silence is important so that the person who is thinking about leaving feels mm-hmm. confident that mm-hmm. their spouse or significant mm-hmm. other who's causing the problems will not find out about their plans.
Correct. Yes. Yes, as I said, the most dangerous time a victim is most at risk of being killed by the abuser. When they leave or when the abuser knows they're going to leave. So, you know, secrecy as you described it is probably a good thing, right? But they can still do things to prepare. Again, you know, let's talk about a neighbor. Maybe the victim says, can I just keep at your house a suitcase with some clothes? So if I have to leave in the middle of the night, or, you know, can I put a box at your house?
Right.
You know, so those are the kinds of things a support system could do to help, but we can help with, we would call it safety planning around leaving, right? We can mm-hmm. help them think through, you know, what they should gather in advance. You know, maybe it's making copies of critical birth certificates, that kind of stuff, so you have
things
it.
You don't even think about,
right,
until
that, you know, you don't have to show us that when you come to the shelter to access services, but to move beyond that and access things, housing, et cetera, you might need those things. And so if you can kind of, in a way that the abuser isn't going to be suspicious, put some of those things together in preparation of leaving, that would be the ideal situation. Like I said, obviously sometimes people just show up and, you know, that's okay too. But
am I wrong in that your shelter's location is not generally known, correct?
I'll let someone else answer that.
That's correct, yes.
Yeah. Okay. So, I can kind of remember years ago, I had brought some donations, and, you know, there was this, you can take them there, they'll take them there, mm-hmm. that kind of a thing, which makes perfect sense for the safety of all people in the mm-hmm. shelter. Now, the shelter holds did I understand, about 30 people?
About 20.
20 people, yeah. Okay, at any given time. Mm-hmm. What's the average stay in a shelter?
You know, if I do some quick math, I can tell you what it was in the last 6 months, but I can also tell you at the state level, because I serve on some state committees, the average stay is somewhere hovering right now just over 30 days at the in the state, right? That's pretty short time to put your life together, a new life together, right?
True.
So, you know, the stays range from a day to, you know, much longer than that, right?
But are there people who just give me a couple of nights away, and then I'll figure out that plan B, or they've thought of that already, where to go?
Well, and there are some victims who aren't ready to leave, but they know things are escalating at home, and they just need a timeout or a break. They have no intention of permanently leaving, and that's okay too. You know, because as I said earlier, it works best when victims are ready to leave. So, yeah, there's a whole range of the amount of time somebody can stay. Generally, we are what's classified as an emergency shelter. And the definition of that is a stay of 90 days or less. So, you know, the average in the state of 45, probably pretty good number to go with. It varies around the state because, as perhaps is no surprise to you or your listeners, it's pretty hard to find affordable housing.
Oh, my gosh. I can't believe how high rents have climbed in Kenosha. That's shocking to me.
Yep. And, you know,
living in the bubble that I do, yes.
Perhaps not surprisingly, sometimes the people we work with might have evictions tied to the domestic abuse. They got kicked out, right? Mm-hmm. It could be for a non-payment of rent because the abuser didn't allow the victim to work, so they didn't have money. So sometimes the people we're working with, the hardest ones to find housing for, are people that have a difficult time finding housing.
For sure.
That's kind of where our advocates would come in, you know, to help help them negotiate that, figure that out. There is some specific money that kids, Kenosha Human Development Services, has to assist with rent for domestic violence victims.
Okay. So, and that would be separate from the regular rent assistance programs.
Yes, it's specific money for a domestic violence victim. Oh, so, you know, we can make referrals to that list. And, you know, so there are some resources out there that we can help someone tap into so that they don't necessarily have to have that job in place to pay for rent, right?
Well, and let's talk about that with, you have a victim, they are ready to leave, and you have advocates. Talk about the full, because you are talking jobs, you're talking places to live, you're talking food, and there are so many fabulous services in Kenosha that people may not know about until they need them. Is that what your advocate does?
That info and referral, that knowledge of different supports, and you are absolutely correct. You know, it is pretty much every issue in the book, right? From affordable childcare to transportation to housing to, you know, perhaps paying for prescriptions and medical needs. You know, the whole gamut that the advocates we have are pretty well versed in what's out there in Kenosha County, and this community is truly blessed to have a lot of resources, right? And if they don't know it off the top of their head, maybe one of their coworkers knows, or, you know, they're going to dig in and try to research it and figure out.
So do they function almost as a social worker? Is it a longer-term relationship, or is it here's a list, let me know if you have questions?
Well, we call them advocates. Right, so it's not quite a social worker.
Right. But I mean,
but they have
how long
knowledge.
Of a relationship can somebody expect
you know,
to have?
I guess what I used to say, as long as they need it.
Okay.
Right.
No, that's
the shelter,
good.
Not necessarily.
Right.
Right. We talked a little bit about that, but you know, people can stay with us long term, as long as they need it. Call the crisis line. You know, sometimes even somebody has left an abusive relationship and they find themselves in another one, right? Mm-hmm. So one of our goals is not only to help keep victims safe, but also to increase their knowledge of community resources, and we're one of them, right? And so mm-hmm. when they need help with something related to their victimization, yeah, they're more than welcome to call, set up an appointment with one of the advocates. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm going to dive back into services in a bit, but I do want to move off a little bit and talk with Sandy a bit about the board of directors and general governance of the organization and then funding. And I think that sounds like that falls under your realm, Kate. Sandy, you're the president currently of Women and Children's Horizons. How large is the board?
Our board is smaller right now, but we number 11 people on the board. We have had in the past more members, and we are open to more members. We're always looking for more members of the board, but we have about 10 members from the community that represent a wide range of backgrounds that serve on our board.
Oh, really? What sort of backgrounds? You don't have to put the names okay. with the backgrounds, but I'm just curious.
Well, we have healthcare. We have lawyers on our board. We have financial individuals on our board. We have law enforcement on our board. Mm-hmm. And we have a variety of other people in education.
Personnel.
So mm-hmm. we have a wide variety of members, which helps the board when you have to make decisions and also for context in the community.
And I think any of our listeners who have served on boards know that there's kind of a wide range of working board versus listening and approving and oversight type of board. How would you describe the work level of your board? And I know right now you're in the point. Oh, she's crying.
It's hard to describe. We're kind of in rebuilding right now. But I think our board is a resource and an oversight board and approving board. That's what our function is. And we work closely with the executive director.
And now you have an interim executive mm-hmm. director, so I would assume one of your big duties is looking for that permanent mm-hmm. Position.
Yes, we started the search for our executive director, and so we're looking for that. We're very fortunate to have Sue, mm-hmm. however, I'm
oh
very...
Oh, my gosh, yes. You know, she was telling me about her
background. With her background,
wow.
She's had so many years in the domestic violence and administration field, and so we're using all of her skills, and she knows her grants like crazy. And, that, you know, that's good for our organization because we're supported very, very much, like 80% on grants. And the rest comes from fundraising or donations in our community. So grants are a very big part of our organization.
And I know Sue actually came from Stevens Point area?
Wisconsin Rapids was the last program I was with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And she still lives up there and is coming down to Kenosha to mm-hmm. make sure you mm-hmm. folks are stable and, mm-hmm. and obviously moving forward. I know funding is an issue this year. One of your grants did not come through for whatever reason, and you're hoping to raise more money mm-hmm. in other ways in order to make up for that. In this yeah. coming year.
Well, I think Sue can speak more about it, but actually it's one of our larger grants that's being cut, and Sue can talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, the single largest funding source for most domestic violence programs in Wisconsin is the Victim of Crime Act. It originates from federal funds and fines assessed to people who commit federal crimes. Mm. That pot has shrunk significantly in the last 5 years. The funding source for this operates, the money comes from the federal government and comes to the state. 5 years ago, they awarded in a competitive process grants, totaling, I believe it was $44 million. What's available in the round that the applications are due for this year is $13 million.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, so
that is
about a fourth of it.
A disaster mm-hmm. for all of Wisconsin, really all of the nation, you know, there are efforts to try and find replacement funding, and some bits and pieces have. But, you know, starting October 1st, we are staring down, all of Wisconsin, staring down some significant cuts in this application round, because the funder knows that there's just not enough to go around. They have said that the maximum any one program can apply for is $250,000. And so kind of bringing that down to a Kenosha level, our funding from this funding source is about $350,000. So we are looking at least a $100,000 cut. It is a competitive process, and there is no guarantee that you'll even get the $250,000. So, you know, we know at least it'll be $100,000 less starting October 1st.
And those dollars, are they specifically earmarked for a portion of your program, or is it an overall organizational funding?
Yeah, in preparing the application, you indicate how you'll use the funds. That funding source only allows you to use that fund for direct services, right? And so you have to describe in the application, it's going to pay X percent of this person's salary who is a legal advocate, and X percent of this person's salary who's based in West Kenosha County. And so you have to describe exactly how you will use them. Their priority is direct services, right? That position may have attached to it things like they need a telephone, they have mileage, they have to be trained, that kind of stuff.
But that won't be covered under the grant, or
it will be in what goes into the application of what we ask for. All of those things would be eligible. But, you know, I guess the question for me who's working on the application is what. We can't continue at the level we're at unless there's some significant replacement funding.
Correct.
So what can go? You know, maybe it's, I don't know, telling staff, you know, our training budget is really limited now. So, you know, we can't send you to any paid for training. You know, in the end, the ripple effects are going to be for victims. Right?
Oh, of course, yeah.
Right? Part of the $350,000 that we get now was money to help help them pay. We talked earlier about, you know, if they don't have money for prescriptions, or maybe they don't have money for, you know, their junior's tennis shoes and he's got shoes all beaten up. You know, that's something that we were able to help with. We might not be able to help with that anymore, right? So in the end, the impact is going to be certainly on the agency and the staff, but it will also be on the victims themselves and what services are available. You know, maybe a support group has to end. And that's the concern, and that's the tragedy. Right?
Well, in particular, I don't think I've ever met a not-for-profit organization that feels, yeah, we cover it all now. You know, it's all a good thing. We'll just lose a couple. No. It just doesn't work that way. You're always just barely doing what you feel is right.
Yeah. But, you know, roughly women and children's budget is about $1 million a year. And so a loss of $100,000 is like 10%.
Yeah.
So 10% of less of something is going to have to happen.
Mm-hmm. Right. Unless you do
unless
replacement
we find
funds.
Something.
Mm-hmm. And I. Mm-hmm. It sounds like I have the right people around the table here to talk a little bit. What are you hoping will happen in the next, what, 6, 7, 8 months before October 1st? How are you all hoping to address this? And do you see it as an ongoing problem, losing this funding, or is it a one-time thing that you're hoping to make up? I know that was like 3 questions in one. I apologize. First, let's just talk about what you're hoping to do to bridge that gap for the coming fiscal year.
Well, I think we've been talking about as a board, because we have two problems. One, the immediate problem that's going to come up, and then the long-term problem of maintaining it. So in the short term, we are going to make an appeal to the Kenosha community to try and raise funds so that we can weather the storm that is ahead of us, because we have a lot of dedicated people in Kenosha. I can't say enough about if we put an appeal out for any clothing, food, mattresses or whatever, pillows, we get it. But what we really need right now is we need funding money to help us get through these months of when our grant is going to be cut significantly. And then we'll have to be looking at long-term plans is what other funding can we get? How can we sustain ourselves? Mm-hmm. We do have the Nifty Thrifty Thrift Shop, mm-hmm. which was started in 2009 by the board so that we would have some income stream other than grant funding. When you're 80% grant funded, it doesn't leave. It's
frightening.
Yes, there isn't much of a margin there. But we're already using that funding. So even though they help support us now, we have to come up with some other means of funding. But in the short term, we really do need donations from the Kenosha community.
And that's kind of where Kate comes in. You know, part of her job is pursuing some of those, foundations attached to a local business or organizations. I think she just wrote one to the Rotary organization, and help develop individual donors, right?
So Kate, are you thinking of are you concentrating on corporate? Are you concentrating on some of these not-for-profit organizations who do provide grants? What's your plan?
What's the plan? The plan is a combination of both. We've got to start exploring avenues that we haven't before with regard to smaller foundations, foundations that have given to us in the past that maybe have dropped off, businesses, and we have to go back to folks that we have known for a long time and really talk with them about what's happening with the agency and see if this is something that they would participate in with us to help see it through. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a combination of all of those things.
And my job is to put together this application, right, and write the best darn application I can, mm-hmm. so we do get the $250,000. We do get the maximum that we can possibly get.
Right.
There are other government grants that I'm trying to think if there's anything due in the time frame that I'm here. But, that is the role, to make sure that keeps coming and that we stay in good stead with those funders.
Oh,
you know, we're
sure.
doing reports. We're accurately tracking the expenses and drawing down reimbursements. That's the other interesting thing about these federal grants is they're all reimbursement grants. We have to first spend the money, and then they pay us back, right?
Yeah, so you better have some cash flow.
You better have a nickel in your pocket, because it becomes a vicious cycle, right? That's kind of where I'm at in the short time that I'm here, is doing the best I can with the government funders in particular that we do have. And some of them are even local government funders. Kenosha County contributes some money towards the shelter operation. So, making sure that those relationships stay healthy is kind of the role I'm playing.
That's huge.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's time consuming and highly necessary. Plus, at the same time, there's staff I'm sure you're trying to supervise.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Oh, yeah. You've followed me around then, huh?
Work with nonprofits.
So it really is a team. We're all kind of doing our piece to try to address this at the state level. There's efforts to try and secure some funding that would be distributed to all programs, right?
Oh, that would be fabulous. Mm-hmm. So that is there an organization of organizations?
Mm-hmm. Yes. We're members of two of the statewide membership organizations, one around domestic violence and the other around sexual assault.
So
there are efforts, and there's efforts at the federal level. There's national organizations trying to free up, increase, put some other money in that pot that funds this grant that we're seeing losses in. So there are efforts, there are a lot of efforts going on to try and stabilize this. But
well, while
the
I was
clock
thinking,
is ticking.
While thinking of the impact, I may not have heard this, but what was the reason for the those mm-hmm. grants to mm-hmm. shrink so much?
Yeah. It's
wild.
A little complicated, but sort of basically, the pot of money is called the Crime Victim Fund. And the source of revenue for that fund at the federal level is fines and forfeitures on federal crimes. So an example was, this goes back a ways, remember the Exxon oil disaster?
Oh, sure.
When
it
all
does
the
go oils, back, but yes.
oil spill, and they were fined millions of dollars. That fine went into this fund.
Really? Okay.
Yep. So it's things like that. I think maybe the Bitcoin one, maybe
all
more
right.
recently, if there were fines associated with that, that went into the fund.
So what you're saying is we need something bad, Dad.
Well, not necessarily, because we don't really want that either.
Okay.
But what happened last several years was at the federal level, there was kind of a reluctance by the administration to prosecute federal crimes.
Oh.
Right? And on top of that, many of the federal crimes resulted in a plea bargain,
mm-hmm.
right? And so any of the money is in that plea bargain didn't go into the fund. So they just fixed that. So now if there's a federal crime and there's a plea bargain, the fine that would be in that plea garden will go into that fund. So,
okay.
you know, there are efforts to build that fund up.
Okay.
But, you know, it was
is that
depleted.
Going to help you in October?
No, that's kind of going to be kind of a long-term thing,
sure.
right?
No, at least it's good to know,
yeah.
kind of understand a little bit
yeah.
what caused it and that it's not somebody deciding that
you
this
know.
Isn't important anymore.
Right,
it's just
right.
the yeah. circumstances have changed
so,
in the funding you know, pipeline.
They're looking at building it up. That federal pot then is allocated to the states based on the state's application for their portion of it. We're lucky in Wisconsin that the Office of Crime Victim Services that administers that funding was very prudent about as money came in, they tried to even out the peaks and valleys, you know, so they kept a little in their pocket, kind of like we do. They had a little savings account for when it wasn't so good.
Okay.
Other states have seen drastic ups and downs in that funding, and the folks in Wisconsin have done a pretty good job at trying to level it out for programs. Unfortunately, their savings account is also not there anymore, right? So, you know, that has impacted what's available for distribution starting in October.
Okay. I mean, that makes sense, and I appreciate mm-hmm. the additional explanation.
Mm-hmm.
We have a few more minutes, and I wanted to get back to talking about services, and that's the 24-hour hotline. What does that do? Somebody calls it. What are the types of calls, first of all, that typically come in?
I guess when I describe the hotline, you know, it sounds like it's a crisis line. You have
it does,
to be
yeah.
in crisis. You don't have to be in crisis, right?
Okay.
It is, if it's a crisis to you, it's available to you, right? It is a hotline or a crisis line around domestic abuse and sexual assault. You know, the staff is not equipped for somebody who might be more appropriate calling a suicide hotline,
mm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
It's around the issue of domestic violence. So the typical calls are everything from, you know, a victim wanting to just kind of do a reality check about, is this right or wrong? Is this domestic violence?
Mm.
I would tell you it is very common for a domestic violence victim to think, oh, this isn't domestic violence. He doesn't hit me or she doesn't hit me. You know, it is still domestic violence. And part of it is that the abuser has planted the seed in the victim's mind. This is nothing. This is how it usually is in relationships.
Yeah.
You know, and so
it could be control.
Yes, exactly. And so a victim gets a kind of false sense of what a healthy relationship looks like. And so, you know, sometimes they're just calling to kind of question, is this really how a healthy
really?
Relationship would work? It doesn't make sense to you and I, right?
No,
but
well,
that is
even more so. I'm impressed that people are questioning.
Yeah,
that's kind of seems like mm-hmm. a good first step.
And you know, here's how it would typically go, Jane. You know, they'd call and they say, I'm not really a domestic violence victim, but. And then they start describing what's happening, and they are a domestic violence victim, but they've been led to believe, you know, this is normal, right? Mm-hmm. So it might be somebody at that point. It might be somebody preparing to leave, and we can help safety plan around leaving. It might be a past person just checking in, you know, how things are going. It could be, as we talked earlier, a friend or family member wanting to know how to help somebody. It could be, you know, we don't have attorneys on staff, but we can certainly talk to a caller about a process. You know, I need to get a restraining order. How do you get one? Our staff can tell them what the process is and help walk them through the process. So, you know, it's a whole range of informational to emotional support to
Is there a separate number for this hotline, and that can be accessed off of your website?
It is.
Which is?
Oh, the website is. I'll look.
Don't you love it when people do that to you when you're on
the
air?
New kid on the block.
Yeah, I know.
I had the hotline in my head.
Sandy's going to go look it up. Yeah, and I know it's one of those things where you Google it and it'll pop up, and the world's a better place. But I would assume that the hotline is listed on that page.
I can tell you what it is.
Yes, you can tell me the hotline number.
262-652-9900. And that's the number that is always answered by a live person. It's not an
morning,
answering
noon,
machine.
And night.
Yep.
Wow, great.
24 hours a day.
Excellent.
Keep them busy.
Any idea about average number of calls in a give me a period of time?
Yeah, that's a little difficult to put your finger on, because in our database, the way we track, the only thing that really gets tracked as a hotline call is an anonymous call.
Oh, okay.
So if you were one of our current clients and called in, that call would be logged as a service on your record, not a hotline call.
Okay.
So that's a little different to tease out. And, you know, if I gave you a number, it would be considerably lower than the actual number of times the phone rings.
No, that makes sense. Are there a couple of people who are trained specifically for that?
Mm-hmm. It really, that responsibility rests with our shelter coverage staff.
Oh,
you know,
okay.
Certainly there are people who are, you know, will pick it up as a backup, but that is, they are the first responder to that crisis line call.
Okay.
Yeah, and so, and they're there 24 hours a day, holidays, all the time.
Oh, that's good to know.
Yeah.
And Sandy, did you find that website?
I've got it.
Okay.
It's wchkenosha.org.
Oh, that makes sense. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So Women, Children, Horizon, WCH,
Kenosha.
Right. And there's no dot, no dash, no nothing.
WCHKenosha.org.
Okay. Yeah, org.
Yep.
Great. Thank you.
I want to circle back. We talked earlier about how long do people stay, and so I did some quick math on the average stay. Earlier I said at the state level it's about 30 days. And in the last six-month reporting period, the report I brought, the average stay at Women and Children's was 30 days.
There you go.
So we're
very average.
Yeah, so we're very average.
No, and that is good. Is there a requirement if somebody contacts you from outside of Kenosha County? What do you do?
The system for services for domestic violence victims needs to be an open system, right? Because sometimes victims want to go flee to another county or city because they have a relative there or support system there, right? But generally our service area is Kenosha County. That doesn't mean that somebody who's fleeing here or intending to relocate here, that we couldn't help them with that process, or they have a court case here. Maybe they live in Racine and the incident happened in Kenosha County. We can help them. But there is a domestic violence program that serves every county in Wisconsin. And so what we are probably our first blush would be, have you called the program in your county, right? If they don't know what it is, it would be, well, we can tell you the name of that program and their phone number. Not all counties have a shelter. Kenosha is a big county, but mm-hmm. I come from up north. There are many counties up north that don't have a shelter, right? So we try to certainly make sure that we're serving the local victims, the people from Kenosha County, but understand that sometimes there is, you know, a need to relocate, and we'll help them.
And as long as we're talking county, on one hand, I'm thinking, well, of course we have an office out in the county, as they say. But at the same time, I'm a little surprised there's not just one mm-hmm. office. Do you, any of you know when that started or when that opened up on the western side?
Probably about 5 years.
Okay, fairly recent.
That is one of the most recent locations or additions to our services.
The newest thing, Jane, in most programs is what they call mobile advocacy. Mm. Used to be in the old days, somebody would call and they'd say, you know, I need to talk to somebody about a restraining order. And they'd say, okay, can you come over here? I got time on my calendar at 2:00. Programs have tried to reduce the barriers and say, is there a good place I can meet you that's safe, right? And maybe it's at another agency. Maybe they're at the hospital. Maybe they're at the courthouse. You know, that's a little difficult because then you got to send people out. But that's kind of been the approach, is, you know, being available different places. To that end, I think we have office hours or times that we're here at Gateway, right? Mm-hmm. We're at an institution, the three technical colleges or the three colleges,
campuses.
Maybe it's only 1 or 2 days a month, but there and have a presence, right? So we try to go where the people are instead of making the people come to us. Other than that, West Salem office and the people based at the courthouse, the other advocates are at the building that's on 63rd.
Yeah, our administration
Avenue?
Building, yes. 2525 63rd Street.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
And can people come to your office to make further connections, donations? We have a few minutes left. What types of donations, besides money, which obviously is very much needed right now, but what are the other typical things that the organization looks for?
When it's non-monetary donations, the things that we can always use are full-size toiletries, pillows, blankets, twin size sheets, things of that nature.
Paper products.
Paper products, absolutely. Yeah. Cleaning supplies, diapers, anything that's disposable or you need to replace at some point in time are things that we can always take donations of. We also take donations of clothing and household items at our Nifty Thrifty. And what's really neat about that is our clients get vouchers to shop there. So people, I don't want to give it to a thrift shop. You're really not. You're really giving it to our clients. And whatever is not taken by a client, maybe purchased by somebody in the community, but then the money comes back to Women and Children's Horizons. So it's a great resource for us, for the clients, and for the community to have that thrift shop.
Oh, for sure.
The shelter, is 11 or 12 bedrooms, kind of depends on how it's going, but with a capacity of 20, right?
Yeah.
It's pretty much 10 families, maybe. Sometimes there's singles. And so you got to think about, what does your family use? Well, we go through it 10 times, 11 times, right? Toilet paper, food products, cleaning supplies, diapers, as Kate said, all of that stuff that you use at home, laundry soap.
And if we bring it to 2525 63rd, that's the best location, and then you'll distribute it as needed.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you all for joining us today. We've been talking about Women and Children's Horizons of Kenosha County with Sue Sippel, who is the Interim Executive Director, Kate Cothell, who is Fundraising and Development Director, and Sandy Reese, who is Board President. And I'm Jane Herring for Community Matters.
You've been listening to Community Matters. All programs are archived at WGTD.org. Click Shows. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.
Well, this week on WGTD's Noon Tunes, we're featuring the music of former Kenosha Unified teacher J.J. Masterson. He records with his friends under the name Folk Punk.